Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. It's good to be together. The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. This means that our invitation is to all, and that all are welcome here regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion. As we light our candle for your thought, for an adult with ADD, the key to success is finding the courage to be who you are. This means shaping your life to fit your impulsiveness, distractibility, high energy, and need for stimulation. To give us something to think about, the book I'm working out of is by an author named Dale Archer, and he concludes this book with a letter he received from a Spanish photographer named Guadalupe, who wrote him this letter. He says, after our interview, Spanish photographer Guadalupe wrote to me and made a brilliant observation about why her ADHD is such a gift. Our conversation left me thinking about my ADHD for some days after. I do have mixed feelings about the disorder since it never lets me rest. But there is one thing that I'm very thankful for. That is a low tolerance for frustration. I've always heard that the ability to tolerate frustration is something essential when becoming a mature adult. The possibility for happiness. But no matter how hard I've tried, I've never been able to stay for long in a situation that doesn't fully satisfy me. Whenever a job became dull or a love relationship didn't appeal to me anymore, or something inside of me other than my will decided that I had to quit, no matter how unreasonable it seemed, I couldn't stand it any longer. This sounds very immature. But looking back, I realize now it was right. Now that I found the man that I feel excited being with every single day, even when I get mad at him. Or now that I've found a job that I'm excited about, I've learned that there's no need to put up with things that don't fulfill me just because maybe quitting them is a risk. And I thank ADHD for making me do it. I found out later that ADHD was a thing other than my will that decided it was over. That doesn't mean no sacrifice, but sacrifice is no problem when things do fulfill me, like taking care of my son at night. I often hear people complaining about situations that they could easily quit or try to change, but I believe that they could be a lot more satisfied with their everyday lives if they weren't afraid to quit what they don't actually enjoy or what doesn't fulfill them. Then it would be easier for them to be passionate about their lives. And I thank ADHD for that habit. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. It's a heck of a name, isn't it? Deficit, disorder, disability, dysfunction. Makes you want to pity the poor fool that's got it. It's my hope in the next 15 minutes or so that if you have thought poorly of this diagnosis in the past, that you will come out feeling differently about it today. My interest in the subject began 10, 12 years ago, something like that, when my son was diagnosed with it. I didn't know much about it, and I didn't even know how to think about it. Then I heard an interview on public radio with a guy named Dale Archer who had written a book called The ADHD Advantage. The subtitle is What You Thought Was a Diagnosis May Be Your Greatest Strength. So I got it and I read it. And I didn't learn a thing about my son, but I learned a lot about myself. Although I've never officially been diagnosed by anybody, there is no doubt in my mind that I am on this spectrum. And like autism and other things, ADHD is considered a spectrum condition. Some folks who are high up on the spectrum, like my son and another number of other people that I know, require medication in order for them to function properly. And Dr. Archer will tell you that that's quite appropriate. But only in the most extreme circumstances and only as a last resort. For the rest of us, we can figure it out through life management skills, mindfulness practices, and discipline. When we're able to do that, when we're able to wrangle this condition properly, Archer calls this our superpower. He tells lots of stories in his book about wildly successful people who have figured out what they can do and what they can't do. And when asked if they were given, if they could be given the option in a perfect world of getting rid of this condition or keeping it, most of them say they'd rather have it. I believe I have gotten to the point of agreeing with that. I think I'm glad I'm this way. Most of the time. But not always. Archer also says this, and I quote, "Those with ADHD are lives entrepreneurs, CEOs, leaders, explorers, champion athletes, and out-of-the-box thinkers with extraordinary abilities to work under pressure, rebound from crises, multitask, and conceive of ideas outside the restrictions of linear thinking. While people with ADHD can have trouble focusing on any one task, if something piques their interest, they can become hyper-focused and able to carry an idea or task through to new heights of achievement. They," he says, I say we, "are also an overwhelmingly positive bunch, possessing an innate resilience, high energy, and a sense of humor that allows them to get past the challenges of day-to-day living and to keep on trying." He adds this, "Simply put, ADHD can best be understood as a brain with a very low boredom threshold." Then he adds, yes, this is greatly simplified. I wish it were so easy. "People who have a chafe against the mundane and the routine and yet excel in chaotic situations. Centuries ago, they would have been the restless ones in the village during times of plenty. But when famine or catastrophe struck, they were the fearless leaders who found new lands and new ways of surviving. A research study found high populations of those with the genetic background of ADHD in far-flung places like Siberia and Tierra del Fuego and Australia, prompting scientists to refer to the dopamine transporter gene associated with ADHD as the explorer gene." Now, I think he has several seminal points he's trying to make in this book. And the first one is that with self-awareness, and I think what I would add, an appreciation of our condition and a willingness to adapt to what we're not good at in order to get at what we are good at, with that, only the most severe among us really need to be medicated. A second point he wants to make here is almost the beginning of a conspiracy theory. He takes on what he sees as a collusion between our educational system, the healthcare system, and big pharma to diagnose and medicate children, not so much in an effort to meet their needs, but an effort to meet the needs of teachers and parents and classrooms. When I was a kid in school, this had not been invented yet. School was not my friend. I knew this forever. What I didn't know was why. And the reason was that the educational system of the 1950s and 60s and probably beyond was not designed for people like me. Children like me were a problem. We couldn't sit still. We couldn't listen for long periods of time. We were easily distracted. And over the years, we have learned that it's easier to, in essence, medicate the personality out of a kid than it is to adapt the educational profile that maximizes our capacity to learn. Because the thing is, most of us are smart. We can learn. We just don't learn the way other people do. You know that I can learn. You watch me do it. Every week, every time I come here, I've learned something new to bring to you. I can read hard things and make sense out of them, take long books and turn them into brief presentations. But the way I describe it, we have a prior step that we have to take when it comes to learning something. We have to learn how we're going to learn it. And most of you can look at a set of instructions and move from step one to step two to step three. Some of you perhaps do like I do, where we are drawn to step one, step seven, pretty picture, what's for lunch? Was that a bird? A guy I know who would be shocked to learn he's on this spectrum describes it as chaos learning, which he absolutely loves and has inadvertently learned how to embrace. So what exactly is this? Well, this is what Archer says. The trait is a combination of brain chemistry and genetics that affects the dopamine transporter gene and its receptors. Simply put, the brain reacts differently to stimulation in someone with an 8, 9, or 10 on the scale compared to someone who is calm and well-organized, like a 1 on the continuum, to whom I am married, actually. In effect, the risk, the pressure of a deadline, chaos, or the possibility that you're about to go off a cliff actually causes a different reaction in those of us high on the ADHD scale. We actually feel a rush, a euphoria, not the panic, anxiety, and dread that many experience who don't have ADHD. These extreme states actually boost a feel-good response in our brain, which is why many with ADHD appear so focused and functional in the middle of a maelstrom, he says. Generally speaking, an ADHD diagnosis means you have some of the following tendencies: difficulty focusing or staying on a task, inattention to details, inability to sustain attention, trouble listening. How are y'all doing? You listening? Okay. Disorganization, avoidance of tasks you don't find interesting, frequently losing things, being easily distracted by external stimuli, and forgetfulness. People with 6 of these tendencies qualify as having the inattentive part of ADHD, according to the DSM-5, the diagnostic manual. Now, some of this stuff is common to all of us. He says that over and over, but it's the combination of them that gives us the designation. So how on earth does this turn into a superpower? Well, here are the things he says that are the advantages: nonlinear thinking, creative, stringing together concepts and seeing connections other people don't see, impulsivity, snap decisions. Sometime I'll tell you the story of how we bought the farm we live on now. Took like that. Resilience, the ability to bounce back when some impulsive choice has failed. Restlessness. This condition takes a lot of energy to bounce from one thing to another all the time. And that's why a lot of ADHDers are athletes. Multitasking. This was the reason I accidentally became a pretty good pastor. And cool under pressure. Now, we don't all have these things in equal measure. Some of these develop more as our circumstance and life experience needs them to. In my life, most of the adaptations I have made were purely by accident and circumstance. I found that in order to be a good pastor of a church, it actually helps to be this kind of flaky. I would get into the office convinced I was going to get a lot done this week, and the phone would ring, and somebody would walk in the door and need a tank of gas, and the hospital would call and tell me that because of HIPAA regulations, they couldn't tell me what was wrong, but Ethel just got admitted and she needed to see me. I became a runner in my 29th year, because we wanted to have kids and I wanted to quit smoking. So I became a runner to punish myself for wanting cigarettes. I would find out decades later that exercise is a critical component to keeping ADHD or supplied with necessary doses of dopamine and endorphins. I learned contemplative prayer, which gives the monkeys a chance to sit down and play with their toys and rest so that I could focus on something. I already played music, which is another nourishing activity for us. So to sum up, it took me a really long time to be okay with being me. In my first job as a pastor, I came into it with the misguided, if somewhat Buddhist, belief that I could be like water, that I could adapt to any container I was poured into. That proved miserably wrong. I nearly blew off the church completely at that point. But a wise and patient career counselor pointed out that, although she never said anything about this, ADHD, she did point out the fact that I had had this wildly chaotic list of jobs that I had taken in my life for which I had no preparation and a background, and I usually got a C. And she said, you know, as miserable as 2 years in Kansas was, you actually did learn something about how the church works. Maybe try it one more time, and then you can quit. And here is another key to success for those of us that are on the spectrum. If we find a mentor that sees the good in us, and that's what happened in my second job, and that's what saved my life. Now, as with all of our topics, there's a whole lot more in this book to nourish and encourage those of us with the D47R gene. But his conclusion is that while those of us who figure this out manage to find our way in the world really just isn't wired the way we are wired. And we often function and flourish on the margins. Yeah. He says a proportionally higher number of people, 50% of people with addiction problems are on the spectrum. I'm not sure what the solution is for kids in school it helps if the teacher gets it. I mean, in the children's book, you know, this teacher didn't get it at all. She just thought this was a badly behaved child. ADHD kids can learn in short spurts and then get some exercise, they do much better. When I was in middle school, which was the worst it ever got, because it was that and hormones and everything else, I'd get home from school and my mother would say, you have to finish your homework before you can go out and play. And I'm like, the fuse is lit here. I've been sitting in a desk for 6 hours. I'm about to explode. So I started lying about it. I said, I didn't study hall. I didn't have any homework. And to the day she died, if my mother needed to get my goat, and I probably got it from her, she'd say, and you never had any homework in the eighth grade, did ya? I said, Ma, I graduated from high school. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a master's degree. I have a doctorate degree. Can we let eighth grade go? Would that be all right with you? Nope, never could. But that was the message to me through my whole childhood. If you just sit down and shut up, it'll be all right. And I couldn't do it.
What?
My best friend, I wish would be medicated because he's a nightmare. But he'll start a conversation about a half hour before he calls me and expect me to then figure out where in the world we are, you know? And I'm like, wait a minute. Ugh. But yeah. I never took a class because I wasn't going to be a preacher. I was going to be a youth minister. And I had to learn how to teach myself how to preach in ways that people could understand. But resoundingly, the message I got from people was, I never would have thought of that. I don't know how you found that in there, but oh my gosh, you know, we've never heard anything like that before. And that became an asset.
What struck me about your talk isn't necessarily the ADHD thing, but how our society is unwilling to accept the range of humanity that lives in it. We would be so much better if we would embrace all these things instead of trying to medicate them away. You know, because if you're on the more contemplative, emotional side, you know, then you're depressed and we've got a drug for that. You can't control yourself. We've got a drug for that. And honestly, you know, because you were talking about this superpower that we need the other people too. We need the people that show up every Sunday and do the, you know, the sound for their church, even though they don't always want to do it. People that are willing to suffer through it and not just say, well, fuck it, I'm going to go do something else. Because, you know, and it's funny because you mentioned all your jobs. I think I've had something like 27 different jobs in my, you know, different, distinct, you know, jobs. And one of the last one has lasted 20 some years. So I had a bunch of jobs really fast. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Anything we do, we really need to just embrace as a you know, as culture, society, whatever, you know, the best in everybody, you know. Yeah. And it's by nature we want to define everything, but by nature it wants to experiment with everything. Yeah. So yeah, you know, we're doing ourselves a disservice by, you know, labeling this as a disorder, right, instead of a superpower, and labeling, you know, that person that's willing to do the mundane stuff. Yeah. You know, that's a power.
Well, two things about that quickly. One is, one of my sons has three kids in the Brookfield School District, and he said they are so sensitive now to neurodiversity, and he said, you're almost left behind if you're not neuro, you know. He said he's starting to worry about that with his he's got one kid that fits with us and two kids that don't, you know, and he's worried about the other two more than that. The other thing he says, as far as finding your niche, finding your career, finding where you belong, you know, the culture says you go to school, you train and become something, and you do it for 40 years, and then you stop. With us, he suggests that you find something that feels like it might be okay, and you go and do it. And if it works, you do it some more. And if it doesn't work, you stop. You take what you've learned from that one and take it to the next one and said, well, I also know how to do this. And you keep bopping. It's okay to, and in this work environment, he says employers are more accepting of a wide range of experience that you've had rather than your steadiness at one particular thing. And so I think, I mean, the world's a much better place for us now than it was back then, but yeah.
It's amazing.
My nightmare scenario is the parent-teacher conference, where I'd hear, every year I'd hear, well, he could do anything he can put his mind to. I finally found the language for that about 5 years ago. I wish I could have said, you know, it's like telling me that if I can get him to sit still and use a fork, I can keep this fire-breathing dragon as a pet.
Yeah.
When I was in high school at study hall, I would go up to the study hall lady and say, can I draw on the table? And she said, well, of course you can't draw on the table. I said, I'll clean it up when I'm done. I'll use a pencil. Can I draw on the table? And she went, well, we kept doing things that there weren't no rules for yet, you know. And so I would draw all hour, and I'd have this great, big, gorgeous thing, you know. And then 5 minutes before the bell rang, I'd raise my hand, go get the paper towels, and clean it all up and walk out. When I was in seminary, I was taking a process theology class. My notes never made any sense. It was so esoteric, so I started drawing. And by the end of the class, my professor would come to see what I drew to see how he did, which I thought, this is way too much power to give a student. My doodling ended up with a 20-year career as the editorial cartoonist for the Rice Lake Chronotype, a weekly newspaper, and I have a tub of 1,000 cartoons in my basement that I drew over 20 years. So the doodling, you know, that's what I have to say about that. These conversations are so fun. Dr. Archer concludes with this. Remember all those guidance counselors, teachers, and bosses who underestimated you were wrong. You were wrong. That full potential all those report cards said you weren't reaching is well within your grasp. It's not that you can't focus, pay attention, or follow through. You are not destined to a life of being scattered or late or forgetful. Well, maybe a little. But once you've lit that fire, your ADHD strengths will burn past the weaknesses and you'll be unstoppable. And then who knows, maybe you can even change the world.